This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
It's really lovely to see you all. And I suggested that we do something of the coming parasha so that it gives you something to reflect on and think about during the week and get ready for Shabbos. How many of you have chumashim? Not a whole lot. So those of you who can, next time, if you bring a chumash, I think you'll get more out of it, because we'll work with texts. If you look, those of you who've got the Chumash, if you look at Parshas Bahar, and if you look just before Shlishi, that's in Perichof Hei Posuk Yud Ches, you'll see firstly a strange layout. The formatting is strange. We have in the first part of the Parsha, up till this point, we have the laws of Shmita and the laws of Yovel. So Yovel is quite a difficult halacha because it's difficult to keep because it requires that on the seventh cycle, that's the 49th year, not only do you have a Yovel where you can't farm the land, but after not only do you have a Shmita where you can't farm the land, but after that, immediately after that, you've got another year. And anybody who's been in Israel this year and in touch with it knows that the Shmita is difficult. Shmita is not an easy thing if one keeps it properly. And once in 50 years, you keep it for 2 years running. That's very difficult. So those two halachas are given to us in the first part of the parsha, Shmita and Yovel. And we're told at the end of, just before Shlishi, the end of Sheni, Va'asisem eschukosai v'esmishpatai tishmeru va'asisem eson, and you shall observe my chukos and my mishpatim, and you'll do them. V'shavtem al ha'oretz lovetach, and you will dwell on the land securely. Rashi says that security in that pasuk means that you won't worry about being exiled from Eretz Yisrael because keeping the Shemitah is a way to guarantee security in the land. Then is Shlishi. So that's the end of a paragraph, end of a section. The next pasuk is, V'nosnoha oretz pirio, and the land will give forth its fruit, V'achaltem lasov, and you'll eat to satisfaction. And you will dwell securely on it again. So again, we have almost a repetition on that. Previous pasuk was Vishavtem Avoritz Lovetach, and he has Vishavtem Lovetach Oleha. A slightly different betach, says Rashi, Sheloi Tidaku Bishnas Batsoris. You won't have to worry about famine. So the previous one is physical security of being exiled. You won't lose the land, nor will you have to worry about famine. But the positioning of this verse is difficult. The obvious place for the posuk would be at the end of Sheni. That's how Sheni should finish off. That you do the keep the chukim and mishpatim, you'll live on the land securely, the land will give forth its fruit, and you'll eat to satisfaction. You won't have a problem, you won't have to worry about famine. And then the new paragraph should have started. Shlishi should have started. V'chi tomru ma nochal b'shana hashviis. And if you will say, what will we eat on the seventh year? And the Nizrav lo nesav is to us saying that we haven't planted, we haven't gathered our food. But sivisi es birchasi lochem, don't worry, says Hashem, I will command my brocha, bashona hashishis, during the sixth year. The osos es hatavua lishloish hashonim, and on the sixth year, it will give forth sufficient for 3 years. So you don't have to worry, the sixth year will produce, you'll have for the sixth, for the seventh, for the eighth, for a little bit of the ninth, everything will be fine. Then, Zeratim is Hashon HaShminis, you plant on the eighth year, Vachaltim in Natvua Yoshon, Ad Hashon HaChidis. But until the ninth year, you will eat from old Tvua that was actually produced during the sixth year. Ad Boi Tvua Sotach Yoshon, until the new produce becomes ready, then you'll eat the new produce. Imagine a situation where you know that your salary check is going to stop for 2 years. And there's no income. Can't get a job, can't get a salary, your investments are frozen. That's it. And you've got to carry on operating. That's what this was. And to operate with bitochen, we could be completely relaxed. This is normal. So the first, there are a number of things to look at that we'll touch on. The one is this sentence: why Shlishi starts with Benos Nohor, it's Puyo Vachaltim Lasoyu Vishartim Lovetoch Aleho. What that's got to do with the next piece? The next piece being, and if you say, what will we eat and how will we manage? Says the Ramban, those of you who've got it, Kemo Musuras. This pasuk has to be just carefully phrased. V'chi tomru b'shana hashviis matoicha. It doesn't really mean v'chi tomru manoicha b'shana hashviis. It's not that if you will say, what will we eat in the seventh year? That's not what it means. In the seventh year, you've still got leftovers from the sixth. What it means is that you will say, what will we eat in the seventh year? Hashviis manoicha. So the way to read the pasuk, says the Ramban, is v'chi tomru manoicha. Bashana Hashvi should be read as V'chit Homru Bashana Hashvi is Manoicha. Lest you say in the seventh year, what will we eat next year? Because in the seventh year, you're finishing up the leftovers of the sixth year. Now you've still got the rest of the seventh year, the whole of the eighth, and part of the ninth. What are we going to eat? That's how it's meant to be read. Says the Klei Yakar, Yesh Befarshim Shebashana Hashvi's Eino Musov. Some explain that the seventh year is not talking about, and you will say about the seventh year, V'chi tomru bashishis manoicha bashana shviis, and bashana shviis lo nizra. What it means is that you'll say in the sixth year, this is different from the Ramban, you'll say in the sixth year, what are we going to eat in the seventh? Aval bashviis vaday lo yomru manoicha bashminis. But they won't say in the seventh year, what will we eat in the eighth year? Shari ne'mar v'astat ha'tzvah l'sholosh ha'shonim. By the seventh year, they've already seen three times the produce produced by the sixth year, because that's the promise. So the Klei Yakar brings a view contrary to the Ramban. The Ramban says what it means is they're going to say in the sixth year, they're going to say in the seventh year, what are we going to eat in the eighth day? Says the in the eighth year, says the Klei Yakar, that's ridiculous. By the seventh year, you know already that there's more than enough. So what's your problem? It's all the storage houses are full, there's enough food. You don't have a problem with the eighth year. Why would you worry about the eighth year? The answer lies in the Rashi. If you look at the Rashi on your test, the second Rashi on your test, V'achaltem lasoivo, says Rashi, af betoich hamei'ayim tehei boi berocha. Even in the stomach, there will be a brocha. So Rashi introduces us to a different understanding of what this brocha is. The brocha is not that there will be vast amounts of food during the sixth year, because Rashi is probably worried about the same thing that the Klei Yakar is worried about. If there are vast amounts of food in the sixth year, why are they worried? Why are they saying anything? So clearly the amount of food produced in the sixth year is the same as normal. That's why they'll say, oh, if this is the same, but there's no extra food, what are we going to do for another 2 years? If it's the same as normal, then what's the brocha? Says Rashi, the brocha is that you will need very little food. You will use a third of what you normally use. You'll be able to live quite comfortably on a third of what you usually do, and that way there'll be sufficient for the seventh year and the eighth year and part of the ninth year. That's how Rashi learns it. That still doesn't help us with the phrasing, but we begin to understand a little bit more about what this brocha is and what brocha is altogether. So, from a quantitative perspective, it actually doesn't make a whole lot of difference if you've got three times as much, or you need a third as, or you use a third as much, whether it's driven by consumption or supply. It doesn't really make that much of a difference. We're used to thinking that your demands, that your requirements are fixed, and what changes the variable is supply. So how do you become wealthy? You become wealthy if you've got more than you need. But it could be the other way around as well. There's no reason why you can't become wealthy by needing less than you've ever needed before. That's also brocha. So our idea of brocha is sometimes stuck on the net amount, but we should be looking at the gross. We should be looking at the end of it all. It's not just a matter of how much input there is and how much output. It's not just a matter of how much input. It's how much is left over when you subtract the output from input. And if the input is greater than the output, for whatever reason, that's bracha. And therefore, the bracha here is af betoich ha'ma'ayim. How does Rashi know that? Because if that were not the case, the question would be difficult of the chitomru. Why would you even ask what there is in the shona hashvis? Now, I want to learn with you a very fascinating and beautiful sfas emes. Anybody who's watching, I can borrow. I just left mine upstairs. And just, thanks a lot. Perfect. Thank you. The sfas emes starts with a very innovative approach to these psukim. It's in the name of the Sefer Noam Elimelech b'Shem Ochid. The Noam Elimelech, he says, right in the name of his brother, ki al yedei ha-she'elo, this is in the year Taf Rej Lamed Zayim. The Sfas Emes divides his parshas up into the different years that he gave shiurim. So he's got a parsha, and on each parsha he's got his comments of each year during the time that he taught. And this one is from Taf Rej Lamed Zayim, which is about 120 years ago, is that right? 130 years ago. 31 years ago. And he said, Vir Hadvar, he says, Al Yede Hashe'ilo Yitzterech Hamokum Letzavus Es Habrocha. He learns it very interestingly. There's quite a lot of discussion, even in the Gemara, but in the Forshim too, as to what this V'chi Tomru means. V'chi Tomru could mean, if you will ask. If you will ask, what will we eat? Don't worry, you're going to have Brocha. Why does he have to say, and if you will ask, and if you don't ask, will you not have bracha? So the Torah should just say, I'll give you bracha, you don't have to worry. V'chi tomru could mean, you will inevitably ask. It'll be normal for you to ask. It'll be natural for you to ask. I'm telling you, you're going to be asking this question, but don't worry. There's a slight difference in the way Unkelus and the Targum take it. Unkelus says, v'are tomru, when you ask, implying it is inevitable. You will ask. And the key term means when this happens that you will ask, don't worry, here's the answer. And the Targum Yonason says, Ba'arum in Temrum, and will be if you are to ask. So it's not so inevitable. You may ask. And according to the Targum, we have the difficulty. If the meaning is, and when you ask, then, and when you ask, this is the answer. It's inevitable. Hashem is just telling us you shouldn't worry about it. The question is inevitable. It's normal. But if we learn it, v'chi tomru, if you will ask, then it's a little different. And if you ask, then I will send bracha. And if you don't ask, what will happen? Are you going to die of starvation? Says the Sfas Emes, in the name of the Noam Elimelech, al yedei ha-she'elo yitztarech ha-mokem le-tzaveses ha-brocha. Hashem will bring the bracha only if you ask. If you don't ask, there's no bracha. Now, how does that work? So what happens to you? So he innovates an amazing idea. And essential to his idea, what he's going to explore here, is the difference between miracle and bracha, nes and bracha. And he learns that this is a downgrading. If you ask, I'll downgrade this from a miracle to a bracha. We think of it as an upgrading. I'll give you a bracha. Says Hashem, no, if you wouldn't have asked, you would have had nisim. Now you'll just have bracha. Because you asked. What's all that about? And in this we begin to understand what nes is and how it operates. Uvir ha-devorim, and this is what it means. The ma-kushya hizu ma-noichal. What is the question? Why are people asking what will we eat? Man di-yahiv chaye yohiv mazayna. The person who provides life will provide food. Why should we worry about it? Interesting that the Sfas Emes is even concerned about such a thing. Why are people even asking this question? It's such an obvious thing. Why are you even asking that? Hashem would not provide food. Of course there's going to be food. Ach, ki im yeye kiyum b'nei Yisrael al pi nes, v'ein kol ha-doyrus ru'uyim l'nisim. They know that there'll be food. That's not what's worrying them. They know that there'll be food. Hashem's not going to give us a law that's going to wipe us out. Not going to tell us to keep Shemitah in Yovel and then wipe the whole nation out with starvation. That's not what he's going to do. Of course there'll be food. But it will have to be by miracle. And the ain kol hadoris ruin lenisin. Not all generations are fit for nisin. That's why they say, "What will we? Maybe we're not fit for nisin." That Hashem has it within His power to give us the food, we know. That Hashem plans to give us the food, we know. But we have to be on the right level to have a nes. And if we're not on the right level to have a nes, what's going to happen? That's their question. Then what he says, Hashem, you won't need a nes. You'll have it b'derech brocha. Uvrocho hiktsas b'teva. And brocha is closer to nature. So you've got nature, brocha, nes. And that will explain a little bit again why Rashi says that what it means is that achaltim lasoiva b'toich hame'ayim. So if you eat a year's worth of food in a year, that's nature. Hashem provides the food, you've got what you need, there's nothing left over at the end of the year, that's natural. If the earth produces 3 years of food in 1 year, that's nice. And in the middle is bracha. The earth produces the normal amount of food, but you don't need as much. You're healthier, you're able to eat less, you're able to manage on less. That's bracha. Ach be'emes tzrichim b'nei Yisrael leida, but really b'nei Yisrael should know, ki hanisim v'hativiyim hakol echad. Listen to these words carefully. Really, the Jew needs to know that miracle and nature is one. Uvemes ein meis godol v'niflo kamoi hateva. Not everybody goes along, but listen to this Fasemis's view. And in truth, there is no miracle more wondrous than nature. That is the biggest miracle of all. Nature is the biggest miracle. Shu ha-godol shebeniflois hamusogim lon. It's not possible to imagine a miracle bigger than nature. So let's pause a little bit. You see, why do we not see nature as miraculous? Just because we become accustomed to it, that's all. If we wouldn't be accustomed to it, it would be miraculous. Everything in nature would be miraculous. What did Rabbi Sachs say in that essay that you said, hey, how many genes in there?
Like 100 billion molecules in the human body.
Yeah, and how much there is in each thing, and what there is in the whole genetic code. And if you just look at what the human body is, what greater miracle is there than that? It's not possible. The Kriyas Yam Suf is a joke compared to the human body, to the human mind, to the human spirit, to everything, or the way we function. Where's there ever been a miracle like a human being? So just because there are lots of us and we've been going for a while, well, it's not such a miracle. There is no Pele, there's nothing, there is no miracle greater than Teva. V'az, k'shezu ha'emuna misbarei livnei Yisrael. And when the Jewish people understand that there's no, that Nes and Teva are the same, Teva is Nes, nature is miracle, then ein esek liyos lizen al pi Nes, and it's no big deal to have your sustenance delivered by miracle. Because it's the same. If you think they're different, then you're limiting yourself. You're limiting yourself to nature. Because you're saying, this is natural and that's miracle. Well, who am I to deserve a miracle? That's your creation. That's in your head. You've made that distinction. If in your mind there isn't that distinction, then there's no difference if it's by miracle or it's natural. What's the difference? It's exactly the same.
Now, why should we be more surprised that one tree grew in that spot, and three trees grew.
Like Rav Dessler says, yeah, you should be surprised that tree even grew in the space, in the place where you put the seed. That, what a coincidence! Just exactly where I put the seed. That's where the tree grew. Because the tree growing is a miracle in any case. So why did it have to do? Because you've got to do some ishtadlus. You've got to sort of do some natural cause. But it could have been that you do the cause here and the effect is somewhere else. That sometimes happens in business. You put the effort in here, and the result comes from somewhere else. We know that's. That's how it works. There's not always a direct correlation. There's a halacha, there's a law of nature, and that is that you have to invest, you have to be engaged. And then there's also a law of nature that Hashem responds and the world responds. But it doesn't mean that response is sometimes natural and sometimes miraculous. It's always miraculous. And therefore, rak v'chi tomru, as v'tzivesi. Only when you say, oh my goodness, we're going to need miracles. Who says we're ready for miracles? If that's the case, says Hashem, you'll only have bracha, no miracles. That's what you'll have. Let's pause there a moment and go back to the psukim. Now we understand why this posuk yutes is an introduction to posuk chof. What is posuk chof? And if you will say, what will we eat on the seventh year? Why will you say that? Because you haven't seen the miracle of the sixth year yet. There's the same amount has been produced, and you haven't realized that you're not going to use everything that's been produced. But what's important is that it's because what's happening in that sixth year is that va'achaltem la'soiva, you're getting it b'derech brocha. And the reason you're getting it b'derech brocha and not b'derech nes is because of the chi toimru. Because you've asked ma'noicha, what are we going to eat? Not because you don't believe there'll be anything to eat. You do believe, but you know it'll have to be b'derech nes. To think that it has to be b'derech nes, to separate in your mind the idea of miracle from the idea of nature, is already a somewhat of a failure of bitochen. The part of our bitochen has to be that there's absolutely no difference between the two. The neis hu losho in haromo, and the word neis comes from the word of l'nasot, and the neis means like a pillar to lift something up. Shehi hanhago misromemes mihanagas hateva u'miyuchod l'bnei Yisrael. What is different about neis is that it's specific for the Jewish people. So we are the miracle people. We can do miracles. We can operate with miracles. That's a higher form of nature. That's what miracles are for us. It's just a higher form of nature. It's natural. It's scientific. It's a higher form of nature. V'chein kosev ha-maral. The Maral said, in fact, kemo sheyesh seder la-hateva, kein yesh seder la-hanisim. Just as there is a science of nature, there is a science of miracle. It follows rules, it follows laws, there's an order to it, there's a way to achieve it. Miracles are no less structured than the nature is. Uvemes hadoyo shenase Elohim hanisim, those generations for whom the miracles were done, hayo kavua bahem ha'emuno, hayo shovo Elohim hateva v'hanisim. They understood, the belief in their mind was clear, that nature and miracle was the same. For a Jew, there's no difference. Nature and miracles are the same. So this is really interesting. Apart from talking about national miracles, so for national miracles, the whole generation has to be on a level where we see nature and the miracle as on the same level. But it does open the possibility for individuals who've performed miracles. And then there are the big, unusual miracles that happen, and there are the little miracles that happen in everybody's daily life. We just don't really notice them. But we can create miracles if our mindset isn't limiting. And the limitation of our mindset is to think that, to even have the word miracle in your vocabulary. To have the word mace in your vocabulary is already a mindset. The word mace means supernature. That's what it means. What does supernature mean? It doesn't mean it's not natural. It just means it's a supernatural order. There's a natural order and there's a supernatural order. That's all that nace means. It's super. It's above. It's a natural order above the normal natural order to which other people are subject. It's interesting. We talked about it this year yesterday also how close the non-Jewish world is getting to some of these concepts. And where they're getting it and how they're getting it, who only knows. Whether they're accessing sources of Masorah from some source or another, whether they're just doing it by trial and error, whether among them they're Jewish people who don't know that they're Jewish people. However it is, they're getting very close to understanding some of these principles. I think last time in one of the shiurim we discussed The Secret. How many of you read The Secret? You all read The Secret. Is it nonsense? Is it fiction or is it real? And then what's the principle? The principle is that miracles happen unless you confine yourself. It's unbelievable. Where did they get it from? They learned this fast ends. Where did they get it from? And yes, this is a particular Jewish quality, but we know also that we bring things into the world. The Jewish people bring things into the world, and sometimes if we're not worthy of it, other people benefit from it, and we don't even benefit from it. So we have to be careful how we use it. But that idea that the non-Jewish world is beginning to sense that miracles are not so spectacular. You can do them if you don't confine yourself. And we've got to start getting ourselves out of that mindset of thinking that a miracle is a big deal. Because if for you, what is the Sfasema saying? If a miracle is a big deal for you, then it is a big deal. It's not going to happen. If you think miracles are unusual, you know what? They'll be unusual. If you think they seldom happen and they don't happen in our generation, that's fine. They won't happen for you. You determine whether they're going to be miracles or not by the way you relate to nature, by the way you relate to what a miracle is, by the extent to which you create division between nature and supernature. And if to you there's no division and nature and supernature is one, then there's no reason why miracles shouldn't happen as naturally and as easily as nature happens itself. But I'll share with you an idea a little bit further. It's not quite as simple as that. And the secret also, if the secret was as simple as the secret says it is, then everybody would be multi-millionaires. There are pieces of it that are missing in how to access this. And even here, what happens if a Rosha, if a wicked person believes that miracles and nature are the same? But he's just not a good person. Does that mean that he's going to be able to perform miracles so easily? Well, there have been times when Rishonim have been able to do miracles. But it's a little bit more complicated than that. No, that's exactly what he's saying. Yeah. There's something missing. So let's see what's missing. Let's see what's missing. And that wasn't missing in the case of these people. Of the Shemitah, okay, because the Sfasem is saying they shouldn't have worried about it. They shouldn't have worried about miracles. Miracles should be normal to them. So what have they got? What is the piece that they've got that makes it so normal? We just came out of Pesach, so on Shvi Shel Pesach, we had the Kriyas Yamsuf, the biggest, the most spectacular miracle of all time. Not the biggest miracle, says the Sfasem. Kriyas Yamsuf is no bigger miracle than sunrise. But it's the most spectacular miracle. And think of the moment before that miracle happened. So B'nai Yisrael are, try and put yourself in that situation. You're standing with the sea in front of you and with an army approaching from behind, the mightiest army of the world. You're unarmed. They're coming and there's an ocean in front of you. What are your options? What can you do? There's nothing to do. So you can hope for miracles. So what does Moshe start doing? He starts davening. That's not unnatural, that's not abnormal, that's what we do. When they're in trouble, something else to do, you daven. What can you do? Hashem gets angry with him. He says, Mati Tzakila, what are you shouting to me for? Daven, he says, get moving. Why are you davening? It's not a time to daven. What does Hashem mean? That is one of the most puzzling phrases in the whole Torah. Mati Tzakila, what do you mean, Mati Tzakila? What else am I supposed to do? Who's going to save us if not you? Then he says, Daber Abnei Yisrael V'Yisrael. Why shouldn't you daven at that particular time? See, we're an interesting nation. We're the only people who daven when things are good. We don't daven specifically when things are bad. When things are bad, you say an extra capital to healing at the end of the davening. But the main davening is the same whether things are good or bad. You daven three times a day whether things are good or things are bad. Unfortunately, we sometimes daven with more kavanah when things are bad. But that's not how it's supposed to be. We're supposed to daven the same when things are good and when things are bad. And I've often mentioned that we're the only people that I know of that says grace after meals. Everybody else says grace before meals. When they're hungry, they daven. Once they've had their meal, they're ready to go and party. They're finished. That's when we stop, and that's when the Doraisa is. That's when the main Birkas HaMazon is. He has an opportunity to turn to Hashem and to daven. So our best davening is when we're full. Our best davening is when we say thank you, not please. Hashem only brings us tzoros when we're not saying thank you enough, and He makes us say please. But that's not the desired state. The desired state is that what we say is Hallel and Shvach and Hodoyah, that we thank the Hashem. We don't beg Him. So, for Moshe to turn and it's tefillah in a bad time, Hashem says that's natural. That's not supernatural. All human beings do that when they're in trouble. They daven. Even atheists that daven when they're in trouble. Well, that's not a big deal. What you've got to do as a Jewish people is a completely different kind of avodah. So let's have a look and see what were the components of making that miracle happen. How did it happen? There's a very fascinating medrash with Yosef when he was struggling with his yetzer hara while he was involved with the wife of Potiphar. Shimon Ishkatron Omar, the Medrash says, Bischus Atzmoisov Shel Yosef Nikro Hayam LiYisrael. It was the bones of Yosef that split the sea. That's what did it. Without that, it wouldn't have been done. Why? Hayam Ro Vayonis. It says, Adodikti Hayam Ro Vayonis. Bischus Vayazov Bigdo Biyodo Vayonis. The fact that it says Hayam Ro Vayonis, as we say in Tehillim, we say in the Halil, that the sea saw and it fled, is the same word that he left his jacket in her hands and he ran. Vayonis, he fled. And that fleeing out, that moment of fleeing out, was the force of energy that was retained in his body and was able afterwards to split Yam Suf. So what do we see in the Medrash? That Yosef was able to build up a force so powerful that it could split the Red Sea, but not only could he build up that force, he could store that force in his body to be used at a later stage, even after his death. So, you know, this kind of thing nowadays is so easy to understand. And until recently, how did you understand this? Just by a moment, you just had to believe it. But now we know what cell memory is. We know that your body remembers everything that's ever happened to it, and it doesn't reside in your brain. It resides in every cell of your body. It has unbelievable memory. It has a memory that goes back to before birth. It's a memory throughout the period of pregnancy. It has a memory that goes back even before that, because the DNA of the genetic material come even from before that. So we're carrying within our bodies memories that go back, and we've known that in Chazal all the time, that we have within us the memories of Har Sinai, that we stood at Har Sinai. What does that mean? We stood at Har Sinai. We weren't born. Yes, our genetic material was around, which means that some of our genetic material contains within it the memory of Har Sinai. All we have to do is access it. And we were at Kriyas Yam Suf, we were there. There's a part of us that was actually there. We just have to access it. And the Torah teaches us how to do that, how to access these areas. So Yosef, the fact that Yosef was able to build a force, store it in his body to be used at a later stage, when all that was there was the bones. Doesn't matter, bones are made up of cells. The genetic material is in the bones. So the memory, the cell memory of what happened at that moment resides in Yosef and builds up the power. Now here's a piece of information that the secret doesn't know. And that is, and of course it's not just the secret is put together stuff that the dozens and dozens and dozens of people are now writing about. But none of them know this. How do you build up that force, and how do you build up that power? It's so simple. If you want to know this, so I'm saying to you, to do a miracle, you also need some energy. You can't just sit in on your recliner and kind of think about miracles and say, yes, to me, Teva and miracles are the same, Mason Teva is the same, hocus pocus, come, the miracle, nothing's going to happen. There needs to be an energy. You need to have an energy. Where do you get that energy from? Where does that energy come from? And it's so simple. The emotion created the world with consistent laws in all areas of life. How do you develop physical energy? If you want to be able to lift a weight that is beyond imagining for your size and strength, how do you do it? What do you have to do? You have to train. What are you doing when you train? How do you train? How do you build strength in the body? You've got to
develop muscle.
And how do you develop muscle? You develop muscle by defying the law of gravity. That's how you do it. You take a weight that gravity pulls down, and you push it up. You do that a few times. When you finish that one, you take a heavier weight that gravity pulls down even harder, and you push it up. And so you go, and what's happening? Every time you defy nature, your strength is building. You stretch things that nature contracts. You contract things that nature stretches. Every time you defy nature, you're building physical strength. What's that to teach you? That's to teach you it's exactly the same with Ruchnius. It works exactly the same spiritually. Every time you defy the forces of spiritual nature, you defy the natural forces of human gravity, spiritual gravity, every time you do that, you build strength. So every time you say no, I'm going to define that a little bit more clearly in a moment. Every time you say no to the force of gravity and you do something unnatural, you defy the law of nature, that builds up resistance. How does the Shulchan Aruch start? You should be as powerful as a lion. You should defy the laws of nature in order to get up, because then you've got energy for the day. If you kind of wait until you're awake, in any case, it was very beautiful. Malcolm and me, when we were in the game reserve, now we were right next to two sleepy old lions. And the question, I don't know if they were old or not, but they were two sleepy lions. The question was how long was time, gate closing time, really. So the question was how long were we going to sit and see. And there was an Afrikaans fellow there, and he says, no, these guys are hungry. There's going to be action here tonight. Now the question is, how long do we wait for the action? And they were sitting there, and it was worth waiting just to see that male lion, a huge specimen, wake up from his slumber when there was a little noise that interested him. The spring, like a springbok, he moved. And then I understood what that means in the Shulchan Aruch. That was defying nature. Well, in a sense, for a lion, it's not defying nature. That's his nature. But if a human being does that, that's defying nature. Because that's not the way to get up. The natural way to get up is you wake up, and you kind of orientate yourself, and you rest a little bit, and you slowly get to it. That's a natural way to do it. To be misgather kairi, to jump up and be alert immediately, is defying the law of nature from the moment you get up. So that you're already starting to build the energy you're going to need. And that's yisgaber. That's building gevurah. That's how you build strength. And so it goes through the day. Every time you do something that isn't natural, for the right reason, you build greater spiritual strength. So Yosef, in his body, builds the spiritual strength that is later used for Kriyas Yamsuf. So now Moshe is standing on the edge of Kriyas Yamsuf, and he's got this atom bomb in a coffin. He's got all of this energy in a coffin. And he knows that. He knows what Yosef is. He knows what's in that coffin. He says, Hashem, my tzitzakel, you don't need me. This is as natural as anything. Well, you've got Yosef. Open the sea, go. You don't need me for this. It's all done already. There's a little bit more to it than that, and that is that the Daber ben Yisrael, how do they do it? A Nachshon walking into the ocean, what do they think? What did he think would happen? They didn't think it was going to split necessarily. It doesn't matter what was going to happen. One thing Nachshon knew for sure. He knew they were going to get to the other side. That was a promise of Hashem. So if you know you're going to get to the other side, you can't go backwards. There are no ships. There are no bridges. What do? You walk. You need miracles. So what? Miracles. Miracles are no more natural than nature is. So it doesn't mean that they knew the sea would split. Maybe they would have walked over the sea. Maybe boats would have appeared. Maybe angels would have taken them over. They don't know what would have happened. It doesn't matter what would have happened. And I often say the miracles are in the strategy. You don't have to work out how to do things. You just have to work out what to do and to commit to doing them for the right reason. If you've worked out what to do and committed to do them for the right reason, Hashem takes care of thee in the most miraculous of ways. That's when miracles happen. So let's put together, what do you need for a miracle? You need to see the other side. You need to believe it absolutely. You need to know it for sure. And that they're very good on in the secret. The power of knowing for absolute sure where you're going to be. What it's going to look like, what it's going to feel like, every aspect, every little detail of it, that you've got to know for absolute sure. That's the one component. The other component is you have to have energy. And that energy comes from defying the law of nature. And then the third thing is, Daber B'nai Yisrael, speak to B'nai Yisrael, give them the vision of being on the other side, and then, the Yisrael, they need to move. No miracles if you stand still. If you stand in one place, no miracles. You've got to be moving. Once you're moving, once you're making decisions, then miracles take place. So what are now the components of the miracles? Are the spiritual energy that comes from defying nature, the vision of where you need to come and for good reason, and the yisoh, and movement. Those are the three things you said. So I said in Toronto during Pesach that there's a simple little equation. Nes plus Nosea equals, sorry, Nisoyim plus Nosea equals Nes. You've got Nisoyim, your resistance to nature, plus Nosea, you move, equals Nes. It's all Nun Samach. And it's all Nes means movement, and Nes means upliftment. And that's from Bayanos, from Ruben, from Vayiso. Nes means movement, Nes means upliftment, Nes means miracle. It's all of those things. If there's Nisoyim plus Nisio, then there's nice. So here we've got a bit of a sense. Now if we look at the parasha, then we understand why they don't have to be so concerned about nice. Do you have to be deserving of nice? Well, you have to have spiritual energy. Otherwise you can't transform nature. Did they have it? Did they have Nisoyim? Of course they did. They're going into a Shemitah. That's completely unnatural. What could there be more defying the laws of nature than to say for 2 years we're not going to plant, for 2 years we're not going to do anything, because that's the halacha, that's the mitzvah. What greater nisoyin is that? If you've got such nisoyin, you've got such spiritual energy generated by defying the laws of nature for the Ribono Shel Olam, and there's nisiyah, you're moving, and you've got a vision of where you want to come to, then miracles are easy, there's nothing about it. But if you're still going to worry after all that, you're going to say, what's going to happen? Do we need nisim? Since the Ribono Shel Olam, I'll have to resort to simple brocha. That's what you'll have. You'll have brocha and you won't have nisim. But you certainly have within your capability to generate and to create nisim. So let's leave that there. To summarize, we saw the Ramban, whose view was that they're going to comment in the seventh year. What will we eat in the eighth year? The Kleyokra says, but that's ridiculous. Why would you comment in the seventh year when you've already seen the plenty of the sixth year? Answers the Kleyokhu, we see in the Rashi, V'achaltim la'sova means b'ter chame'ayim. There wasn't a miracle. There was only brocha. Which leads us on to the Sfasenis' view that brocha was a downgrade of what could have been. There should have been nes, because you said v'chi tomru, I downgraded it to brocha. Which means that you had the same amount, but you didn't need as much, so you're able to survive fine. That explains why Venosno Etzpirio introduces the whole parasha. It does everybody, is Nes and Teva really just the same? Do you just get it whether or not you deserve it? No, the first thing you need, as the Sfasema says, is you need to really believe that Nes and Teva are no different, which means every bit of nature that you see, you need to wonder at in the same way as you would at miracle. And that becomes kind of a daily practice as you just see things happening, to actually look at the wonder of it. Otherwise miracles don't happen. And there's this importance of building up spiritual energy, and the way we build up spiritual energy is the same as the way as we build up physical energy, by going through the day constantly doing things, living through this yearness, and doing things that defy nature, in order to strengthen ourselves spiritually.